Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night and that familiar sound. Well, actually, it's a little unfamiliar sound. We're thinking of changing up a little bit on our theme song. But it is time for the weekend wrap. Happy Father's Day to all those fathers out there. We extend our congratulations and certainly well wishes to all the fathers out there. And enjoy the day. Enjoy being in king of the house. Lord knows, sometimes we think we're a little bit bigger than what we are, but our family always brings us back and provides us with a little concrete foundation. But right now, let's talk a little boxing. Of course, a whole lot of controversy this weekend on some of the main bouts. Primarily the Rigondeaux fight, along with the Ward fight. We're also going to talk with Scully about the big happenings up there at Conestoga. He had a few pictures, of course, up on his website, meeting with Sean Porter, a few other people. And as always, getting to know some of the older champions and visitors to Conestoga every year. We know we always have, of course, Don Charg and Bill and. Of course, I'm sure Pablo and a lot of other guys all went up to there. So it's very interesting to see what's going on in the world of boxing. And of course, this is only the beginning. We do have a couple more big fights coming up this year. Of course, we had the big announcement for Floyd. And Conor McGregor. I'm sure we're going to discuss that a little bit also. Wait for my co-host to call in so we can talk about a few of the more interesting things, topics that have happened around boxing. I'm sure he's going to have some word on Kathy Duva and her protest of the Andre Ward fight. As I said, even though we saw a much more engaging Guillermo Rigondeaux, we also found out that this fight was covered with some controversy. So I'm waiting to get my co-host in here and hoping that Scully, like I said, comes in. Blayman, unfortunately, will not be with us today, celebrating with his family, I'm sure he'll be back next week. So, with that being said, let me see if I can get in touch with Scully one more time. All right. Well, it seems like we're having a little trouble getting to Mr. Scully here. I'm not sure whether it's our might be having a little trouble with Blog Talk, but we do have our co-host here, Mr. Jabron Clement. Jabron, what's going on tonight, man?
Everything is good, JK.
I know when I first tried to call in, things seemed to be a little weird. I'm not sure. Once more, we're having a little trouble with Blog Talk Radio, but I'm sure we'll get through it. Anyway, there were even though we saw a lot of good bounce and we saw a lot of good action, it all seemed like it's going to end up in a big controversy here. We've had protests on the Rigondeaux fight. Now Kathy Duva says she's going to protest the Ward fight. First of all, let's get into how these two fights ended before we start talking about the promoters and the principals. The referee stopped the Guillermo Rigondeaux fight. I believe it was at the end of the first round when both boxers were throwing punches simultaneously. According to the referee, Rigondeaux got there first. Flores didn't, and Guillermo Rigondeaux wins by KO, which supposedly a punch that happened after the bell. Not as blatant as we saw in a last fight, but what were your thoughts on the Guillermo Rigondeaux decision? Did you think that possibly this was one time when the referee was too close to the action?
No, I don't think the ref was too close to the action. I mean, things happen. But my whole thing, I mean, it was kind of simultaneously at the bell. And if you're looking at the rules, protect yourself at all times. Both men was throwing in the midst of throwing combination as the bell rung. So I feel like it was no foul on each fighter. It was just a sequence that they got caught up in as the bell was ringing. And just so happens, Rigondeaux punch landed. But I feel like that was an acting job. I know there are such things as delay reaction and all that, but nah, he looked to see what was going on and then tried to basically find a way out. And his way so far didn't work. I'm just disappointed, and I'm just so disappointed in the network, HBO. Because I've never seen them in other situations go so hard and be so adamant about basically a rule reversal or this is need to be investigated and this and that. Like that just really turned me off. I find it very funny. Because I've heard whispers that they're really trying to get rid of Rigondeaux. They don't want him in the network because of his boxing style. So any way that they could try to discredit him or bring him down, they will.
I do have to agree with you on the Rigondeaux situation. For a champion of his caliber, he's definitely been given the short end of the stick, and it's only through his skills that have kept him there. We all know that his style is not conducive to putting butts in seats, but it's conducive to winning. I mean, you know, isn't that what you know this game is supposedly all about? Maybe if you as a marketing person, tried to make that into a positive instead of you know, like you said, all the negativity because he doesn't necessarily, his style isn't conducive to putting those butts in seats. But you have to admit, in his last three fights, Guillermo's been very active. He's been trying to get rid of that reputation. And because he's such a great defensive boxer, even though he's adapting to a new style and engaging much more, I think he still needs to be Guillermo Rigondeaux. Don't fall, a victim or be trapped by all the negativity that you're hearing. Just keep on winning and keep on proving that you're, one of the best that there is around. It's surprising that you never hear of him, despite his record and skills being really counted into the pound for pound rankings. But when you speak of Mr. Rigondeaux, like you said, they when he went over to England, they postponed the bout over here. He comes back, now there's controversy over here. I'd like when the referee went back and looked at this, one of the big criticisms is that he didn't put the headphones on so that he could hear the bell. Well, at the moment that it happened, he couldn't hear the bell either. So do you think that he did the right thing by listening to, by looking at it in real time rather than trying to hear the sound of the bell, which he was so criticized for? You on mute? What's up? I don't know.
Yeah, sure I am. I was talking away. This is my opinion. I think that the referee panicked because I don't know if you paid attention to this. He started talking. He started talking into a hot mic, and when he noticed that the mic was on, he covered it up, and his whole focus after that point was to make sure that he protect this mic and no sound goes into that mic. So that's why I think he didn't put the headphones on, because he had already kind of put his foot in his mouth.
Now, because of all of these things, do you think there should be a rematch?
For what? No, I don't think so. That dude, come on, did anything in that first round show you that dude was going to do something to Rigondeaux? No, it looked like the second round he was going to get knocked out. Maybe the third round, but I don't think that guy would have made it out the second round. Come on, you have like almost a foot tall advantage over Rigondeaux, and you allow Rigondeaux to control the pace and the range. Something wrong with that?
Yeah, definitely something wrong with that. Like you said, you got almost a foot, you're a foot taller. I think the reach advantage was, 4 inches or 6 inches, something like that. But anyway, like you said, you can't afford to let the shorter man dictate the pace. Do you want to talk about Nico in there, or do you want to go straight into talking about Ward?
I would just like to just give a quick update on couple of things over the weekend. First and foremost, to one of our great, wonderful friends of the show, and she's our guest on our Tuesday show, Miss Melissa Smith. Today is her birthday. Shout out to her, young lady. And on Friday night, speaking of Melissa Smith and the thing that she loves and brings to our show, is educating us on the women's boxing. And our USA Olympian, Clarissa Shields, was able to win a 8-round unanimous decision Friday and to take home a vacant belt. Her opponent was a very game fighter, which was actually a last-minute sub due to some visa issues with her opponent. So that opponent filled in with a week notice and actually, you know, took Clarissa the full 8 rounds. So, you know, hats off to her opponent for giving up a good fight, and hats off to Clarissa for winning a belt. And keep your eye open. She should be back in the ring possibly August, September. And right along. Oh, go ahead, JK.
No, no. I was just saying, yeah, I saw that was a last-minute replacement there, and I was getting ready to ask you to explain that to the fans, which you already did. And, you know, most of all, I'd also like to acknowledge, you know, it seems between this promoter, Mr. Zepke, and a couple other promoters of boxing is returning to the city of Detroit, and hats off to them for, you know, putting on a successful show up there. Go ahead from there, Devon.
Moving right along to CBS Sports, we had our guest last Tuesday, John Anderson, I'm sorry, on our show, and he's part of the promotion out there in Kansas. And they had Nico headlining their card out there, and he came out victorious with a third-round stoppage. The fight card was packed with a lot of action, local gentlemen that was representing up there. Very competitive fight. There wasn't really no fight that people was really way overmatched. It was a lot of guys actually getting their debut on that card. So shout out to those guys and gals out in Wichita, Kansas. And I think that's – oh, and shout out to De La Hoya also. ESPN had some fights on last night that brought some action also to the people who didn't get to see it. You can go check it out on ESPN.com. And I'm just happy, man, that boxing is in a good place. Before we dive into this main event, I just want to throw out some things that's been coming across the airway in the last 24 hours pertaining a lot of different boxers. First and foremost, we have Dillian Whyte on a Twitter war with Deontay Wilder. Eddie Hearn say he sent a nice supposedly contract over to Deontay Wilder and his camp. So keep your eyes on that situation, and that might possibly be the next fight for Mr. Wilder over here. And Dillian Whyte will be making his U.S. debut along with that beef, Mr. Not Cunningham, Brian Jennings. Also, Dillian Whyte was beefing with him, going back and forth, stating that he can also get it. Brian Jennings is 232 pounds right now, on that vegan diet, in great shape. Saw an interview with him at the Ward fight. He's looking to step back in the ring, and it's looking like possibly he's going to be stepping back over with Bob Arum. And speaking of Bob Arum, ladies and gents, if you didn't know, Andre Ward, Roc Nation contract expired last night, and there's talks that he will be signing with Mr. Bob Arum within the next 2 weeks, to go along with the news with Bob Arum making a big deal with ESPN, and we possibly will get Jeff Horn Pacquiao on ESPN, plus we will get Terrence Crawford and Ndongo on ESPN, and they're looking to have 18 fights set up for 2018 already. So this is Rumorville, and it's not in cement, but these are the things that's going on behind the scenes. And keep your ear to the street, and we shall see.
Well, yes, sir. That's you know, and don't forget, you know, speaking of PVC, once again, Fox Sports Tuesday night, we have action out of Las Vegas. Once again, it's you know, these aren't necessarily household names yet, but you know, these are gentlemen that there's great hopes for. One of the gentlemen that will be fighting probably on the TV card is a gentleman out of San Diego here, Prince Smalls. Those of you that are real, you know, diehard boxing gurus or whatever will remember his father, Tiger Smalls. They have a gym out here in San Diego, and the young man has been brought along very carefully. It should be very interesting to see how he handles this, the big stage of Vegas. Also, let's see. Once again, up in Rosemont, Illinois, or the Chicago area, as most people know it as, we have Donovan George. He's set to get back on the winning track. He's going to be an eight-rounder. Also, Mr. Aaron Pryor Jr., those of you that haven't seen him, he does remind you a lot of his father, but he's trying to also step out of that shadow. It just seems, man. Look, I mean, all
JK?
The 24. Yeah, go ahead.
I think Conor McGregor, Mayweather, and Triple G, Canelo, has kind of, how can I say, overshadowed a big fight that's coming up September 9th. And I don't hear anyone discussing it. Do you know the fight that I'm talking about, JK?
September 9th?
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. I'm looking here. Let's see. September 30th, September 16th.
Let's go
September
for the
18th.
Mexican War.
Chocolate.
Leo Santa Cruz versus Abner Morris.
Now, Maybe you know something that a lot of people don't, because I'm looking at the ESPN fight schedule for September 9th, and right now the only fights that seem to be signed is Chocolatito against the gentleman. It's a rematch that he lost, and Mr. Nunez. They haven't really put it on the ESPN schedule. Do you know why that would be?
Because that might can be also, you know, some of the big news that's supposed to drop within the next week or two. Maybe did I spill the beans too early?
Maybe. I'm looking up and saying September 9th. But, you know, but hey, there is a lot. You know, I mean, it seems that the McGregor Mayweather card has even superseded the Triple G. Excuse me, Triple G Canelo card. Do you think that, I mean, you know, knowing what a businessman that Floyd is, do you think that this was all calculated, that he wanted Canelo to announce his date first in stone before, you know, he actually went after this fight on the 28th?
I'm sorry, JK, my headset came out. I'm back.
Oh, did you hear what I was saying?
Not the ending part.
Okay.
About...
The only part I was talking about actually was, do you think that this, you know, knowing how Floyd is a calculated businessman, do you think that Floyd actually wanted Canelo and Triple G to be set in stone before he decided to announce this fight with Conor McGregor?
Of course. Because he have to make sure that he capitalizes the most. So he know he didn't want to go up against it on the same day. So he waited till it was official, did the calculations and seen what would, you know, work out best. And to me, people might look at it and be like, oh, well, it's 2 weeks away. But you have to look at those with actually occurring, you know, during that time. That you shut it out $100, the 26th, boom. The following week, basically it's the first of the month, it's Labor Day weekend, and it's time for kids to go back to school, go back to college, people pay their rent, their mortgage, their, you know, car note. And then the following week is Canelo Triple G. So I don't know how people pockets gonna, I mean, you know, the poor people, the majority of the country, because it's only, what, 10% is rich, 7, something. But, you know, people got bills. And you selling out that type of money, and you, I don't think everybody's going to sit in the house for Labor Day weekend. That's the last, you know, time to really let it hang out before it get cold. So people go out and do things and travel, and you got the here in New York City, the West Indian Parade. People are going to be coming all over the world, you know. So, man, Floyd really thought it out very well.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was thinking. When you talk about finance and, like, you know, you're talking about, you know, all of the things in between, this was another very brilliant business move by Floyd. But let's kind of get to – go ahead.
No, you said let's get to the main event.
No. I was thinking of Floyd you know, the timing. A lot of people are criticizing the timing, talking about, you know, well, they only had X number of weeks. I think it was six weeks after the fights was announced or something like that. I mean, both of these men are professionals. Do you think that the timing really made any difference, you know, whether it was 2 weeks before or 2 weeks afterwards? You know, this has nothing to do with the physical shape of anyone. This is strictly financial move.
Oh, yeah, strictly finance. Oh, yeah, because it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be entertainment. You know how much money he is going to generate in Vegas that week leading up to the fight? And he has his own new strip club. You know the type of celebrities and the things and the events and the people that he's going to bring out? Man, this is going to be bananas. Because you have to look at it. Look, you have to look at the aspect. You're bringing in a whole nother sport, UFC. You're getting crossover. So you're not just getting boxing fans. So think about Floyd fights just as a boxer be ridiculous. You know, the build-up, promotion, fight week, ridiculous. You know, how many times are we going to see? What? How many they had, like 12,000 people, 15,000 people at a weigh-in? Like, that's bananas, you know. So that's boxing. Now you're bringing in UFC. Then you're bringing in the drunk Islanders, the people from Ireland. They are going to come out and support. Are you kidding me? You saw what it was. Ricky had it. You saw he brought 10, 11,000 people over. No problem. And he was fresh on the scene. He was fresh on the scene. So Conor McGregor, everybody know who he is. Man, come on, man. This is going to be ridiculous. They laughing all the way to the bank.
I'm telling you. And Dana White has a lot. I mean, you know, he does have something to be concerned about, because, you know, this is more than life-changing money for Conor McGregor. You know what I mean? He really, unless he just decides that he wants to be, the Floyd Mayweather of the UFC, and I don't know. Well, I was thinking, you know, that on a UFC platform, will Dana White be able to afford a Conor McGregor after this fight? Do you think that this is, you know, that after this fight, you know, win, lose, draw, that, you know, that this is Conor McGregor's ride off to the sunset?
My thing is, why would he go back in the octagon? That's my whole thing. Why? He could go and make celebrity matches all day. They will line up to fight him. You already got, hold up, wait a minute. This just made me think about something that's so contradicting. Wow. I was about to say Amir Khan and Canelo, pop the brakes right there. How is Oscar gonna go out and say he'll put Canelo in there with McGregor as a warm-up fight for Floyd, but turn around and go on ESPN and tell people don't buy the Floyd fight? He done stuck his foot in his mouth.
Hey, this was one of Dana White's biggest, gripes. If you watch that ESPN interview, he said the same thing. You know, how could Oscar possibly, say, tell you don't buy this fight, but yet and still, on the next fight, we do know that Oscar is, back from rehab, maybe it's residual, I'm going to say that, but as a businessman, you have to admit that Oscar, he keeps his name in the forefront, whether it's for some asinine things, such as this statement here, the lawsuit, the last few years, a lot of things about Golden Boy haven't been that productive, but they have also managed to keep them on everybody's tongue. So, the Golden Boy is doing what he's supposed to do. He's promoting. Don't buy their fight, but mine is going to be better. Come on. I can understand, that the Mexican Irish thing, but that there's no way that would be a bigger crowd or better financially. Speaking of that, we'll try to talk about that in our last half hour, but let's get to the main event, because I see a lot of things happening here, some good, some bad, some kind of indifferent. once again, we have controversy over the ending of the fight. Kathy Dula has said, you know, that there were Andre threw too many low blows that the ref let him get by with, and she feels that there should be a rematch. Now, I have a lot of respect for Kathy Dula, and I understand, you know, she has to stick up for her fighter and do everything possible, but do you want to see an Andre Kovalev trilogy?
No. No, I don't. I really don't, because I swear I'm gonna have, man, I'm gonna have a heart attack or something if I have to go to another promotion with Kathy Dula. I just can't take this woman, man. Like, I had so much respect for her. I watched the documentary on her and all this, but over these two fight camps and the stuff that she's been saying that's coming out her mouth is really ridiculous. It's always excuses. It's always excuses. Now, you have to pay attention to everything in between the lines, the little subtle things, because Kovalev knew from the first fight that Andre Ward will get to my body. So, people want to talk about the blow, the so-called low blow. Well, let me educate you on something. I advise you, if you have to wait till next Saturday to get the replay and record it, so be it, or you can go and find it on YouTube right now. But before the bell even rang, he brought both of the gentlemen to the center of the ring, and he gave instructions. And the camera zoomed in when it came time to going over the belt line. And if you pay attention on Kovalev Trump, there's a red K in the middle, the center of his trunk at the top. And in that space, Tony Weeks pointed and said, "This is fine. But anything below that is illegal." Now, Kovalev's trunk and guard was way above his belly button. If you pay attention, it's almost at the bottom of his chest. So when you go back and fast forward to the ending of the fight, watch when they show the replay in slow motion where the punch landed. The punches was landing directly on that big red K. Now, if any fan, any expert can show me where a man's testicles is at his belly button, then you got me. But until you can prove that to me, I have nothing else to say. Your thoughts, JK?
Maybe he's just, you know, maybe he's just well endowed. I'm with you on this. In fact, I would go so far as to say, the night in the dressing room wasn't the first night that he tried on those trunks. So, you know, everyone knew exactly the positioning of his trunks, where they were going to be. Plus, you also have the other guard that's up around there. What do you call that? The other guard don't you have a guard like just above, you know, that sensitive area in the front? Like a crotch protector similar to the one they wear in football? Isn't there a cup? So, I mean, you know, not only, you know, do you have, I mean, this isn't two B-side fighters. These guys are, you know, they both, I think Andre is what now 32-1. I mean, you know, these guys have supposedly fought the best whenever they were allowed to. And once again, I'm kind of like you, man. I'm really disappointed in Kathy Duva. You know, like I said before, I know she has to do what's best for a fighter. But it seems these last two fights, there's been somewhat of a personal feel to, you know, a lot of this. And I look specifically at this second press conference where she was almost as arrogant as Kovalev as to the illegitimacy of the first fight. And quite naturally, when you see this fight, this happen to your fighter again. And I can't say that I was surprised by anything that really happened in this fight, but I was surprised that Virgil Hunter said that he was training Andre for a knockout, and it seems that when he said that, everyone thought that Andre was going to be a headhunter and tried to KO him that way. I think it was very surprising to everyone to see Andre go to body attack to accomplish this. What did you think about that subtle change in Virgil's strategy? Plug it in.
Well, from the first fight, it was pretty obvious that that he could be stopped because of his conditioning. Now, like I was saying, going into the fight, Kovalev was going in with emotion. So you're going to overexert yourself, you're going to burn out even faster. And you actually saw that. You saw his arm in the corner, on the ropes, trying to get some wind, tired. So the stuff that came out of his mouth was so contradicting. If you listen to the interview at the end of the fight, when he said, Oh, he didn't hurt me. I was just tired. But I don't know what happened. I could have kept fighting. Well, hold up. If you could have kept fighting, why was you sitting on the rope? That's my thing. How did you get to the point where you felt the need that you had to sit down on the rope? No point in time in the first fight you sat on the rope. And you got hit with some vicious body shots. So now all of a sudden, you got to sit on the ropes. So I just don't. It's hard to listen to them, man. They come up with so much. And something that I left out about when you look at the beginning of the fight at their trunks, when you look at Andre Ward, pause it right there, you see Andre Ward's belly button, and it's about maybe an inch to an inch and a half gap still of space between his belly button and his trunk. That's how you're supposed to wear your trunk, not way up in the middle of your stomach like a girdle.
But let's talk about that I was tired. Because when you listen, I don't care whether you want to listen to John David Jackson. I don't care if you want to listen to the new team that he supposedly brought over. That was supposedly the job of his team and the Russian trainer was to make sure that he didn't get tired again during the second fight. He was supposed to, they said he overtrained for the first fight. So what happened? He undertrained for this one? Well, I mean, like you said, when you try to listen to some of the things that come out their mouth, and then you watch the actions of their fighter, maybe they should concentrate more on some happy medium to find out, where this man's stamina level goes down. I'm sure they, come on, man, you got machines that measure everything. This man is, he has the funds to bring in some of the top trainers, top nutrition, whatever he wants to do. So if he chooses, to go with some kind of Spartan regimen or whatever it was, evidently it didn't work in the first fight or the second fight. The best thing would be to do is move on, try to work your way back up to the number one contender again. And, if there's a trilogy, then that would be so far down the line that maybe somebody will have to, turn the channel for us. But I'm not looking to see a trilogy of that anytime soon. And I think the Duva team, as well as the Kovalov trainers, have more blame in this than what they want to take. What do you think?
The trainers have a little more to blame. I don't think so, JK. I just think it's the product of Andre Ward's style. I did a lot of film study last week leading up to the fight. I'm talking, I went way back from his coming out of the Olympics to the Chad Dawson fight. Oh, matter of fact, when we get Scully next week or when we ever get Scully back, I got to compliment him on the great job he did in that Dawson fight, how he took control in the corner when things was getting a little rowdy. But I'll get into that another day. But one thing about Ward, he don't pack the power like Golovkin, but he applies pressure. He can be moving backwards, but he'll be still applying pressure because of his style. It's crazy. After watching, so it's like this dude don't stop. You might look at it like, well, his punch output is not a lot. The thing is, he is a thinker. He's just like Floyd. They thinkers in the ring. They're not dead, like you said. They hit and not be hit. Not saying they never take any shots, but when they do things, it's for a reason. They just don't just throw a bunch of punches to throw punches. They be doing it to set traps or to see what type, what are you going to do and what's going to be your tendency.
That's why it always takes, between both of those fighters, it takes a good 2, 3, maybe 4 rounds to feel they fight it out before they start just wiping you out. They mentally break you, you know. But I do have to commend Kovalev for going into the second fight, trying to be more mentally tough. It was a lot of psychological warfare going into the fight. If you notice, after the instructions, they said touch him up. This time, Kovalev didn't even try to extend his hand to Ward, as in the last fight. Kovalev extended his hand and Ward didn't. So it was like that was a one edge for Andre. So Kovalev this time didn't try to give Andre the psychological advantage to start the fight. And even in the clinches, you saw Kovalev throwing combinations to the body, something that he didn't do in the first fight. So I do have to commend, like he said in the post-fight press conference, that both of them got better in the fight, in the second fight.
Well, from your mouth, straight to Scully's ear, because Scully is here. What's up, John?
Hey, how you doing? Just sorry I'm late. I got tied up a little bit, but I'm here.
Oh, man, no problem. We were talking about, of course, the Kovalev fight, and I'm glad you're here because that way we can spend the last part of our last half hour talking about your visit up to the Hall of Fame, and I saw you in the race there with Sean Porter. We're talking about the Kovalev fight, and see, I think you've proven what I said, DeBron, the trainer, because you have to give Virgil Hunter the edge here. He's been with Andre all his life, all the way through his career. He knows Andre backwards and forwards. He knows what Andre does, along with that style. Remember now, you know, Virgil has never tried to change his style. So, you know, this is something that's been cultivated by both him and Andre. And I think that shows that it's your training not only the physical part, but you know the mental aspect that training process brings. So while you before Scully comments on that, why don't you? You said you had some comments you wanted to make to Scully.
Oh yeah, Scully. Leading up to the fight Saturday, you know, I was doing a lot of film study, you know, on both fighters. And I was watching the Chad Dawson fight, and I just got to commend you on the way you took control of the corner when things was getting a little out of hand and it was like a lot of different voices in the corner, and you just was like, shut up, everybody, be quiet. And you just took command of that corner, and you gave Dawson the correct instructions to go out there. Unfortunately, he couldn't execute. It wasn't on him. He was just in front of a better fighter at that time. Maybe he could have been weight drained, but once again, not taking nothing away from you, man. I just thought you did a hell of a job in that fight, if nobody ever told you that.
Thank you. You know what? I really appreciate that because I, you know, under the circumstances, I didn't hear much of that. I heard that in the Hopkins fight, but not with that one. And, you know, it was a tough – Andre was a tough guy to figure out. He really was. Like, training for that fight and preparing, you know, watching the films, it was really difficult. And I guess, you know, our team, they kind of self-imploded because, as you saw – I mean, literally, we had 4 of us talking, and, you know, I figured they're excited and it'll pass, but after a couple of rounds, I just couldn't take it. I'm like, listen, how can you guys, we're professionals and we're on worldwide TV right now, how can you possibly think this man can listen to four of us yelling at him at the same time. It was so, you know, I just felt like I was in a comedy, like I was in some kind of Keystone Cop movie. And, you know, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I had to, you know, like I'm looking out for Chad. I'm trying to get through to him. And these guys are yelling. And, you know, and two of them weren't even boxing people, really. They were just guys who were excited, just excited fans, you know, and they're yelling their opinions. And so, you know, the corner means a lot. I mean, the fighters do the work. You know, they're there and they execute. But, you know, the corner's fight can be won and lost in a corner, and it can certainly be swayed in a big way. So, you know, we had a lot going against us that night, on top of the fact that Andre is, as we see now, a super, super, super tremendous fighter.
Scully, you know, when you speak of that, you know, and we're talking about who's whether it was the trainer or the fighter, when you say, you know, you had, you know, four guys talking and, you know, trying to get through to the fighter, do you think that was kind of a replay of what Kovalev went through last night?
I mean, but you know, I to be honest with you, the way it was set up where I was watching the fight, I really couldn't hear the corner that well. So I don't really know what was going on in the corner. But it seemed like, you know, what I saw, the corner may or may not have had an influence, but Kovalev just seemed, you know, he was a beaten guy. You know, I have kind of mixed feelings about the fight. Now, I'll give a couple different scenarios. Like, one, his body language was extremely bad. It was, you know, he looked beaten. And I always, every fighter I have, from little amateur kids to world champions, I always tell them, your posture, your demeanor is everything. I said, it doesn't matter how you feel. It means nothing how you feel. It matters how you look. You cannot, I don't care if you feel the worst you've ever felt in your life, you have to look like the boss. You know what I mean? You watch Floyd Mayweather, you never see Floyd Mayweather look uncomfortable. You know, he never looks tired. He never shows any weakness. Roy Jones in his prime, very similar. So I think that was one thing. You know, he really showed a lot of weakness. But I'll say this about the low blows. Now, I think they weren't exactly Golato bow low blows. You know what I mean? They weren't that underneath where the cup was lifted up and, you know, you could have like killed the guy. But they were a little bit more than borderline. And my issue, I guess, would be if you hit the guy one time or two times like that and you let it go, but was it bad enough where if he just did that 100 times, like if Andre hit him in that same exact spot 100 times, would you let it go? And I don't think so. I don't think any referee would let that go. I think he probably had a bad angle. I think the fight was going to be over soon anyway, the way it looked to me. Kovalev looked just beaten. And I think maybe when he got hit a little bit low, it almost looked like the nail in the coffin. Like he just said, you know what, Bobby, I'm just going to, you know, give up. I'm going to give up because on top of everything else, now I'm getting a hit a little bit low and I don't feel like arguing about it. And he didn't seem to put up any fight at all.
Now, Jabron, you want to bring your first point back to view about where the K was?
Oh yeah, Scully. I was discussing about how at the did you see the very beginning of the fight, like when the fighters was in the center of the ring and Tony Wheat gave the instruction?
No, I missed that part, but I do know somebody was saying that the guy Kovalev's maybe his belt line was high or his
cup
was high.
Real high. It was way up. It was way in the middle of his stomach, like almost to the bottom of his chest. Like,
right.
It,
you know who said it? Roy Jones. Yeah, we're actually coming to Roy Jones said something about that after the fight.
Yes. And if you look at the still picture of both fighters, you clearly see Andre Ward belly button, and like I said, it's about an inch to an inch and a half of, between his belly button and his belt line of his trunks. With Kovalev, you don't see his belly button because his trunks and everything is way up high. And when you look at the replay of the slow motion hit of the ending of the fight, you see Ward glove laying on that red K. And if you see where that red K is on his trunk, is like at his belly button. If you telling me a man's testicles is at the man's belly button, then
Well, Roy Jones, it's funny you say that because Roy Jones said the same thing. I saw a video with him. The problem with – see, me, I always like to wear my cup very, very low. I didn't even like wearing the cup, to be honest with you. It was uncomfortable, but I like to wear it low. I didn't like it high. But I'll tell you, like what probably happened to him, the thing is, if you pull it up high trying to protect – you know, you're trying to maybe protect your belly, you're trying to protect part of your ribs or whatever. But what happens is if you get hit, especially like with an uppercut on that belt line, you know, the part that covers your stomach, it's going to pull upwards. You know what I mean? It's going to pull upwards. It's gonna hurt you, like, you know, your testicles. So he probably tried to protect himself with the cup, and it backfired on him because the way he was bent over and he got hit and the cup pulled upwards, he probably realizes now that he made a mistake trying to cover his belly so much.
Yeah, because he knew from the first fight that Ward is going to attack his body. So he felt like, well, I got to go in this second fight with my cup and everything nice and high so this guy don't murder me to my ribs and my stomach.
Right.
So, Scully, what was your reaction or what did you think about the post-press conference and Kathy Dewar's remarks?
Well, you know, I didn't see the press conference, but I did see her, you know, where she was, you know, she was yelling at the crowd kind of. She felt they were being disrespectful and it's like, I've noticed before, not just with her, but a lot of people, but she seems to be very emotional. For better or worse, she seems to really be into it on a personal level. You know, maybe she's, you know, really into the fighters or whatever. You know, I think she takes it pretty personal, and she, in turn, she gets maybe a little aggressive with people verbally. You know, people are excited after the fight, and the teams are excited, and they're in the press conference, and they're, you know, they're yelling and they're hyped up, and, you know, you kind of have to understand that. You know, it's not necessarily an appealing thing. You know, it's not very gracious when they do that, but you have to understand they're excited, and you admonishing them is more than likely only going to make it worse. You're going to make them even more vocal, and, you know, you're going to be seen as sour grapes. So, you know, I think maybe she kind of brought a little bit of it on herself. She kind of escalated it with her abrasive words. So, you know, boxing is an emotional game for a lot of people. And so I'm not surprised when things like that happen. I'm actually surprised it doesn't happen more often at press conferences.
Now, Scully and JK, starting with Scully, if this information is true that this been out on the internet, Dan Rayfield even posted it. I've seen a lot of different outlets post that Kovalev finding out not right before the fight, but leading up to the fight, that he was not getting any guaranteed money. He was getting money on the back end of the gate and the pay-per-view percentage. If that's true, do you feel that there is any psychological part that could have played into him going into that fight?
You know, it certainly could, because, you know, that's you know, when you think, maybe you think things are going a certain way and they're not financially, because I'll tell you, like, fighters, Like, I can tell you this. When I remember some of my fights, I'd be in the hotel room and the day of the fight or the day before the fight, and I would have a notebook pad, and I would be writing down exactly what I was going to get to the penny after the fight so that I knew when I went to get paid that I was going to get X amount of money, and that's including – that's including, you know, travel money. That's including expenses. That's including every dime I'm owed. I know what the figure is, and I'm ready to go to war if the figure doesn't add up in the room after the fight. So he found out before the fight that things weren't adding up on the piece of paper that he had, and that certainly could have an effect. You know, I don't know if that would necessarily make you drained like he appeared to be, and you know, I don't know if it affects your defense as much as it did his, but it definitely, in other words, I wouldn't want to have that as part of my pre-fight situation. I wouldn't want to have to go through that. I know a friend of mine, he was getting ready to fight Roberto Duran on TV, and he found out in the dressing room that his previous manager put a lien on his money, and that he was only going to come away with, I think it was like $2,000, like to fight Roberto Duran. And the fight was for a lot more than $2,000. And he was in the dressing room before the fight when he found this out. He, up until that moment, he thought he was making much, much more. And he found out that his manager, you know, put the screws to him right before the fight. And he went out there and he got stopped, you know, just quickly. And he just said, man, it just ruined me. It just was not the time to tell me this point of fact. So, you know, it's definitely, it could be a factor, you know, depending on what kind of guy Sergio is.
I would like to give him the benefit of the doubt, and think that, you know, this is more about, especially in his circumstance, this would be more about redemption than it would be about the money. Just because of all of the, you know, of everything that led up to the fight, to find out, I'm sure to find out that he was making even less money than what he thought. Maybe someone in his team thought that would be motivation, and maybe you know, like John said, you know, psychologically it just drained him, and you know, that along with a bad fight plan. No, I take that back, because I don't think he had a fight plan. I think he had the best fight plan that he could have against the gentleman that he was facing, but I also think that there was a certain amount of psychological warfare that went on between the trainers, meaning Virgil and Jabron's telling me he has to go. Jabron, any final thoughts you need to give us before you leave out?
As always, thank you guys, and you know, the fans always support boxing, and hopefully you'll hear from me Tuesday on the show. That's about it, JK.
All right, man. Well, happy Father's Day, man, and you know,
same to you.
I see you got your voice back, so
Oh yeah,
seem to be all right in the household now. So thanks so much, Jabron. You got it.
All right.
All right, be good.
Here too, Scully.
All right.
Scully, you know, I guess we'll talk a little bit about, did you happen to see anything of the Rigondeaux fight?
Yeah, I definitely did. You know, I hate when these fights end like that, controversially. I mean, it was a tough call. I tell you, like normally I would say, you know, it was in the motion of things, that the flow was already going, but that was a very solid shot, and the bell, you know, had already rang. I mean, I think I won't be surprised if they turn it over and change the result maybe to a no contest.
But Scully, when your opponent is a foot taller and has six inches more reach than you, and you're still able to dictate the pace and the distance of the fight, do you want to see that again?
Oh, I don't necessarily want to see the fight again, you know, but I'm saying, like, as far as being fair, you know, I think there was enough time, because it only takes milliseconds. I mean, when the bell rings, you know, a fighter hears it and he subconsciously, you know, mentally shuts down. And I felt like, and I'd have to see it again, but I felt like there was enough time there where the bell rang and the guy shut down, and I just don't think he thought the punch was coming. He certainly didn't react to it. He didn't, you know, try to dodge it or anything. I don't even think he blinked. I don't think he saw it coming. So my gut feeling is that they're going to review that and they're going to make some kind of ruling on it. I'm sure I would have to assume that the guy's team put in some type of complaint and or a protest.
Yeah, they've already put in a protest. We were talking a little bit about Rigondeaux and his style and whatnot. Do you see a more aggressive Rigondeaux in these last three or four fights? A more fan-friendly Guillermo Rigondeaux?
Right. I mean, there's no doubt that his people have told him, you need to be more aggressive, you need to please the fans more, you need to be more exciting. You know, and a lot of times that's turned out to be a mistake for fighters. It's happened many times. I think it happened with Mark Breland personally. I think that was the initial cause of Mark's downfall as a pro was, you know, they told him he needed to be more exciting. And, you know, instead of using his height and his reach and his boxing ability to easily outbox these guys, they told him he needed to be more exciting and fan-friendly. And, you know, I think things went downhill after that. You know, but at Rigondeaux, I don't know how old he is. Can't be a spring chicken, because I remember going to the Nonito Donaire fight, and that's, I don't know what year it was, but it seemed like a long time ago. I don't know how long ago it was, but a lot has happened. A lot of years have went by since that fight, and really, you know, Rigondeaux has not had a marquee fight that I can recall since then. He hasn't had the big fight. So, you know, this is a guy who, you know, his prime years might literally just being wasted.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's around 34-ish, somewhere around in there. You know, but then he's Cuban, so he might have been 34 when he got over here. You never know.
Right.
So. But he's a guy that seems to be, he needs those big fights now. And like you said, this new aggressive style, he looks good, but, it might be something, that might eventually lead to his downfall, especially considering his age. When we talk about Guillermo, do you actually see with this more aggressive style, since people have known him so long to be a defensive, specialist, do you think that he'll ever get out of, get out of that reputation with the fans? I mean, is it possible to make him a headliner?
I personally don't think so. Number one, because of his weight class, being such a small guy, it's going to be difficult because he's going to really have to have several fights in a row where he's, impressive with this new style. Now that's going to take another year. A good 8 months to a year from now for that to happen. And again, his boxing ability is what makes him who he is. That's why we know him. That's why everybody's a big fan of his,
is because of his skills. And I just hate to see a guy, you know, forfeit his skills for the business of boxing. Because, you know, at the end of it all, I mean, we're trying to win. And, you know, we're trying to, you know, be the best we can be. And I've seen it many times where guys have changed their style for TV and it didn't work out well. And especially at his age, like, he's never going to be, you know, an all-out attacker, not successfully. I mean, it's been ingrained in him for 20 years or more to be a boxer, a slick boxer and a counterpuncher. So, you know, I don't see him trying to be Arturo Gatti all of a sudden. You know, he's innately going to maintain that boxing mentality. You know, it'd be almost impossible to really break that.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, and you know, I'm hoping. I really hope the best for him. I'm sure there's going to be a protest, and this is going to be a draw. You know, or no contest, or whatever the ruling may be, but. I'm sure that there's going to be a ruling in the opponent's favor. Scully, let's talk about the big event, man. I saw pictures of you with Sean Porter. I think you guys are getting ready to run the race up there with all of the other gentlemen that managed to get up there. So why don't you give us a little description and synopsis of Hall of Fame week?
It was just like all the other ones. It was spectacular. We really had a good time hanging out. Mostly we hung out at the restaurant, the bar, Graziano's, where all the fight people hang out. And, you know, everybody was in there. Michael Spinks was in there, and Hagler was in there, and Sean. And I don't know if you saw the video, but I actually you know, I'm friends with James Toney, and I'm friends with Reggie Johnson. And when I got there, Reggie was in the restaurant already, and I had just talked to James a few minutes earlier, and Reggie happened to mention, I mentioned to him. I said, "Yeah, James is here," and he said, "Oh wow, you know, I haven't seen him since we fought." And I'm like, "What?" I said, "Wow, you guys fought in 1991." I mean, you're telling me you haven't seen James Toney since you fought him in 1991. He said, no. So I said, oh, I gotta get on this. So I called James, and I said, listen, I got a friend of mine here. I got a surprise for you. I'm going to come get you, and I want you to meet this guy. So I went over to the hotel, and I got James. And we were actually going to walk back to the restaurant. We didn't have a car. And but he saw a van, the guy was driving the van, and he talked the guy into giving us a ride, and so we gave him a ride over, and I videotaped the whole thing where him and Reggie Johnson actually met each other for the first time since they fought, which was a pretty cool moment. There was quite a few people there to see it. And then we did the road race on Saturday morning. And the picture you saw, that was Sean Porter and I when the race was over. He was right there in the top. Jesse Vargas, among all the boxers, Jesse Vargas won the race with the best time. Sean was right there with him. Sean finished a little bit slower than Jesse did. I ran the race with Mickey Ward. We didn't actually run. We just kind of jogged and talked the whole way. And Mickey just kept saying, you know, my running days are over. Like he said, it's just pacing myself. We're just having fun, you know. So he was ahead of me, and he actually waited for me to catch up to him. And then we jogged the rest of the way. But it was a lot of fun, though. There was, you know, Hagler. Actually, at one point, I was talking. Me and Mickey were on a really quiet road. And we're jogging, and out of the corner of my eye, I see a bicycle, which you don't normally see. All you see is people running. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw somebody next to me on a bicycle, and I didn't even look. You know, I figure it's just some guy, you know, older guy hanging out or whatever. And then I happened to look, and it was Marvin Hagler. He was driving by on a bike, and he happened to stop and talk to us for a few minutes. So it was really a pretty interesting trip. The race was my first time doing the race. Usually I try to do it, and I never could get up in the morning because I'm usually out late the night before hanging out with all the guys. But I forced myself to get up. I knew I wanted to run it at least one time, and so I ended up running with Mickey. So it was a pretty good day.
Yeah, meeting Marvin Hagler is kind of on my bucket list. Anytime you get a chance to talk with Marvin, he'll always be my favorite boxer of all time.
Every year, you got to come, Nick. He never misses. He's at the Hall of Fame every year. He never misses. So, if you want to meet Marvin Hagler, you go to Kansas City, New York, in June of any year, and you'll meet him.
Well, yeah. Hey, that's part of it too. I mean, I hear guys like you and Don Chargan and Bill and. And then you hear about some of the young fighters, how it makes an impact on their career for years, and they can't wait until it's time for them to get up, go up there in June, or I don't know whether they have to be invited or how it goes, but you see so many of the young guys like Sean Porter. These guys going to see some of their heroes. So we always enjoy the pictures that you send back, and we just put them up on our site as part of our sharing and try to make sure you bring a lot of personal insight in and between the things that you do for charity. Which we're going to talk about here in a minute, and the contributions you make to the young fighters, again, which we're going to talk about here. It seems like you're going to be very, very busy, Mr. Scully. I believe you have a fighter that you have a connection with that's going to be in a fight very soon. And also you did some charity work for Mr. Benitez, you want to give us some insights into those?
Yes, sir. Well, the Artur Beterbiev is fighting the eliminator for the IBF title, so he'll be in line to fight Sean Porter. So we're waiting for that to come about, and so I believe the fight is July. It's not definite; the date isn't 100%, but I believe it's July 29th. In Quebec, Canada. I did the an event with Wilfredo Benitez where I had a bunch of guys sign some boxing gloves that I sold, basically auctioned off for Wilfred. And then I had a WBC championship belt that was donated to me, and I had eight former world champions sign it, including Deontay Wilder. And I put that up. I basically auctioned it off on my Facebook pages. And the winning bid was, I believe, $1,950. So that money, I should be getting the check this week. And I will be heading to Puerto Rico in a few weeks and to visit with Wilfred. And so I'll be giving him somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,500 for his sister to help take care of him.
You want to give us an update? I know you were saying that his sister basically takes care of him and whatnot, and it's sad, the things that happened to some of our greats, and even some of our young fighters that are not being able to be taken care of. Any updates on Wilfred?
Well, he his sister takes care of him at home. In the house in Puerto Rico, and he's just in the last few months, I guess, he's taken a turn for the worse. He's just very weak, and I saw some video of him, and he just seems to be almost like a grown baby, in that she has to take care of him, she has to change him and feed him, and he couldn't survive. Like, if she was to leave him alone by himself in the house to live by himself, he just couldn't survive. So he really needs his sister. I did the event in Harlem a few weeks ago, and his brother was there, his sister was there, and they cried quite a bit. You know, they were extremely appreciative of the help, and so I talked to his sister Yvonne, who's in Puerto Rico, and she said, you know, when I get there, just come by and the door is open. So I'll be going probably July 28th or 29th to visit him at his house in Puerto Rico.
Well, hey, as usual, man, you know, a special congrats for all of your hard work. And, you know, if no one else appreciates you, remember, you know, as we always say, man, you know, you're part of the family here too. So we appreciate everything that you've done for the sport.
Thank you.
We are having about 2 weeks here. Manny Pacquiao is getting back in the ring. He's going to be fighting Mr. Jeff Horn. How much more time do you see in here for Pacquiao? Do you see any more major fights for Pacquiao before, you know, maybe he goes back into his senator duties over in the Philippines?
You know, you would think that you would like to see him finish out, you know, with this fight and maybe one more, and, you know, just finish out his career. But I'm afraid that it's just like almost every other guy in the history of the world. They always go for that one big fight against the guy that they shouldn't. You know, I'm afraid maybe they're going to try and put him in with Terrence Crawford, somebody like that. You know, and you know, at this age and after, you know, he's had so many fights. I mean, I don't know, 65 pro fights or whatever it is. He's been a pro for quite a long time. You know, so I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, he looks pretty good when he fights, and if he looks good in a couple of weeks, the idea might be, well, why should he retire if he still looks good? But everybody stays in the game until they don't look so good anymore, and it's usually under bad circumstances. So me personally, I don't see there's nothing for him to prove. I don't see him, you know, reaching the elite levels. Like he can't beat Mayweather, and I just feel like it wouldn't be wise to put him in with Crawford at this point. So I don't know. I don't even, with all his money and accomplishments, I'm not even really sure why he's still doing it, you know, other than the fact that he just must love the game.
I'm with you. Maybe this fight one more, and you know, walk off into the sunset. You know, at least you know, being able, we don't want to see him be another, you know, Sphinx or God forbid Benitez. But Scully, hey man, thanks for sticking around with us for this last 40, 45 minutes or so. We always appreciate what you bring to the game. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media and any projects or anything that you have going on?
Well, like I say, I'm always at Iceman John Scully at Twitter John the Iceman Scully at Facebook and Instagram, Iceman John Scully. And actually, I have my YouTube channel, which is Ice John Scully, which has been getting quite a few hits lately with the videos I've been putting up. So it might be worth a look there. But now, I mean, my main thing, like I say, just getting ready to go to camp with Arthur, and you know, I'm hoping that he gets to fight with Andre Ward at some point or one of the other champions. You know, he's a guy, people are going to really love him when they see him. And I just, you know, I'm excited about his future. Very, very good fighter, very, very exciting fighter for the boxing world to see. You know, I'm just kind of amped up about going to see Wilfredo. I tried to go see Benitez in 2011 when I was in Puerto Rico, and we couldn't find the house. And I had a police officer with me, and he thought he knew where he lived, but he couldn't find it. So, you know, I thought maybe I wasn't going to get another chance. But life is funny sometimes like that, and now I'm definitely going to see him.
Yeah, well, hey, man, you know, we wish you, you know, speed in getting to Puerto Rico, and even though, you know, like you said, he's like a little kid, you know, you can please let him know that the thoughts and prayers of the Pugilist Corner and the Weekend Wrap go with him every day. So
yes, sir,
thank you so much. Thank you so much,
Scully.
And we look forward to having you back whenever you're around to be able to visit us, man. You have a great night, man. We hope to see
you
next week.
Thank you, buddy. You too. All right, buddy.
All
thank
right.
you.
Yeah. Well, have a great night, everyone. We always appreciate when Scully comes around to visit us. He gives us his excellent output. Always, as always, thank my co-host, Mr. Jabrana Clement. And we look forward to talking to you Tuesday on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week. Ooh.